It is my pleasure this evening to introduce our closing speaker and his wife, Dr. Ken Rye, and his wife, Laurel, who is right over here and was leading this table, are graduates of Whitworth from a few years ago in the middle 60s. They are my peers. Ken graduated from Whitworth, and Laurel had graduated a year or so earlier. They were married and took a first teaching job for Ken in Kabul, Afghanistan. And that began a lifelong journey as an educator, as an international school leader, along with his partner, Laurel, who was also a teacher who started here in Deer Park, Washington, just north of Spokane. Ken's career included teaching and being the director of the Alman Academy, a Christian school in Kabul, Afghanistan, 4 years in Thessalonica, Greece, 5 years in Moscow, Russia, 2 years in Copenhagen, Denmark, and a teaching principal and superintendent experience for 11 years in California, and ending his career for the last 11 years as the head of the International School for the United Nations in New York City. Both Ken and Laurel are distinguished graduates of the Whitworth School of Education, and we're very happy to welcome them back this evening to share their experiences and to listen to Ken's wrap-up about our role as global citizens and educators. Dr. Rye.
Thank you very much, and it's wonderful to be back here. I met my wife in this building, but it looks a little different. That was 40 years ago. We were flipping hamburgers, and I invited her to Peter Nero. If some of you don't know who that is, then that's all right as well. And so it's wonderful for us to be back here. We've really enjoyed being gone. We've been gone a long time. But it's been really exciting to see the campus and all the changes here. I'm going to start my comments about my experience as the director of the United Nations International School in New York. It's probably the most international school that we worked in. And it was in New York, which is kind of interesting. But the reason it was so international, and I'm going to give a little bit of background about the school so you can understand a little bit about it. And then I'm going to talk, after I discuss this a little bit, about some of the challenges that we faced in that particular school. But I think the challenges we faced in that particular school are challenges we face in education all over the world in terms of the globalization of the world. The school's mission was to serve the families who were signed to New York and to the United Nations in New York. And that was the primary purpose of the school, though the school served a little larger community than that, because there were a number of business people, international business people from all over the world, quite a few from Japan, from Europe, and any part of the world. And we also had about 25% of the students were Americans who were living in New York and wanted their children to have an international education. We had students from 130 countries, and they spoke their native languages. They spoke as first languages 90 languages. Of course, they all had to learn English because there was no way to run the school without everybody having one common language. So, of course, a big part of the educational program was for them to learn English. We had faculty, we had 310 staff. This is a school, not all faculty, but that was 310 staff. We had 1,600 students, kindergarten through 12th grade. And our faculty was from 70 countries. Now, you can imagine students from 130 countries, the faculty from 70 countries, and you wondered how it worked. I'm still asking myself that question, but it did work. The governance of the school was, because it was the United Nations International School and it was started by the United Nations for families, for the families to come who came to New York. And the purpose of the school was that those students, when they graduated or were there for a short period of time, could then go back to their home countries and go back into their educational system or attend another international school. Now, this is a very big job to try and take on that responsibility for students from 130 countries. But we tried. We taught eight languages, but we taught in English. But the eight languages was interesting because the governments from those eight countries sent teachers to teach their languages and also their culture in the school. So it enriched the school tremendously to have a very strong language program, which you would expect in a school like the United Nations International School. The curriculum was developed by the staff. We had a large curriculum development staff at the school who worked on the curriculum. But the primary purpose it was to prepare the students for the International Baccalaureate, which was the last 2 years of high school, the junior and senior year. And the diploma program for the International Baccalaureate, if some of you have not heard of the International Baccalaureate, I would suggest if you're interested in international education that this is a very good program to get familiar with. But it's a very tough program. It's a world-class academic program that the students had to prepare for. So when we prepared our curriculum K through 12, we had committees of teachers all the way up kindergarten through 12th grade who then worked on the curriculum to prepare the students so that they could do well in the International Baccalaureate. So that was our standard. And it was a tough standard, and it's externally examined criterion reference exam. It wasn't a normed reference testing. So we had outside examiners come in and examine the students for the International Baccalaureate. So that was the standard we set, and that was the curriculum of the school. The challenges in educating students in such a wonderful environment with so many students and faculty and parents from all over the world fell to the faculty and to the administration and to the board to come up with the programs and activities in which to make it a wonderful experience for the students. Now, I do want to say one thing, that the International Baccalaureate was designed, the United Nations International School in New York was one of the first schools that designed this program back in the 60s. It was designed for a particular purpose so that, again, students who graduated could go back to their home countries and go to their universities. And nowadays, a student can graduate from with the International Baccalaureate and can go back to most countries in the world and attend their universities. And the U.S. universities really like students from who have graduated and have the International Baccalaureate. So if you want to know more about the Baccalaureate, there's a lot of information on the web under the IBO, International Baccalaureate Organization, that has descriptions of all of their programs. What were the challenges? I mentioned six here that I think were very important to dealing with the world as it is now, how small it is, how fast things move in the world. I want to give one example. When we went to Afghanistan 40 years ago, if we wrote a letter home, it would take 6 weeks to get a turnaround. Now, that was 40 years ago. There was no telephones in Afghanistan. We could use what was it called at that time? I don't even know if they have it anymore, the telegram. And just today, I sent an email to a friend in Afghanistan and got a reply within, 1 minute. So the change in the world is really tremendous. And I'm going to read a bit of a speech that was given to our students at graduation this year by the Secretary General. Our students graduated in the General Assembly, which was pretty exciting. High school students in the General Assembly with all the families. And the Secretary General called me up an hour before the assembly, said he was in town and he would like to address the students. So he came, and I thought he was just going to say hello, but he gave this wonderful speech, and I wanted to read part of it because I think its essence really grabs what he was expecting of these students when they graduated. It is true the crisis we face, food, fuel, finance, and flu, are devastating indeed, but they also create opportunities for change. As you now move on to college or other pursuits, there is tremendous potential for you to play an important role in making those changes happen. The financial crisis has shaken the foundations of the global economy, its rules, its credibility, and its values. Climate change, too, is a fundamental threat. Every day, it seems scientists find that their worst-case scenarios have become more likely scenarios and the timeline for action grows shorter. As the flu epidemic shows, transnational threats are no longer problems for classroom discussion. They are challenges of the here and now. The economic crisis has also demonstrated our interdependence in the most visible ways. Who would have thought a few years ago that a mortgage crisis in Arizona, Florida, and California would bring down the governments in Europe and shake the economies of societies of Latin America, Asia, and Africa? The world has changed. Ties of commerce, communication, migration bind us ever closer. Threats spill across borders. People are more interdependent, and so are the issues. No nation can deal with them alone. This is a new world, demands a special brand of leadership, a global leadership. We need powerful partnerships. We need, in short, global leaders. It is that effort, solving global problems, working together on big issues, that makes me think of today's challenges not just a burden, but as an opportunity we cannot pass up. So I urge you to look out upon our world of trouble and need, and consider not only what you can do to help, but consider a full-fledged life of public service. I know personally the value of such a career choice. The Secretary General, Ban Ki-moon, is a Korean, and during the Korean War, he went to school. His only school was under a tree, and he was educated in a small village, and he shared this along with the students about how important it was that they serve mankind, but also realize how small the world has become, how global it's become, and what the challenge was for them as young students. I thought it was a tremendous speech for these high school students that were graduating at the UN. But what are some of the, he mentioned many of the challenges that we have as educators. But what are some of the things we faced? And I think these will point out some of the difficulties we have in talking about global citizenship. First of all, I think it's very important, and we felt it was very important at the UN school, that the students understood their own cultures, understood their own history, understood their own languages, so that they could better understand others. Because without a grounding in your own national and cultural background, it's very difficult for you to appreciate the culture of others from other countries. And this was a big theme at the United Nations International School. It was very difficult for us to carry this out because we had so many children from so many parts of the world. So we encouraged the parents to make sure that they worked on the language, that they worked on the culture and history of their children if we did not have opportunities at school. And we tried to create opportunities for parents and for students to have time in their home countries so that they could create this citizenship. Because if you realize that if you're growing up as a high school student and you're in New York City, you become a New York citizen. And the parents, if they're Indian and they want to take their kids back to India, the parents are going home, but the children may not be going home because New York City has become their home. Now, there's not necessarily anything wrong with that, but it does create later on identity problems identification problems when they get older, because are they New York American citizens or are they citizens from India? So we worked with parents and children on this particular issue. So this was very important, is what was their culture, what was their language, what background did they have? And then what was their responsibility as global citizens? And this is what we face in education today, is what is our responsibility as global citizens? What do we have to do in our educational systems? What do we have to do in our schools to make this possible? But I caution most educators that you don't become a global citizen by giving up your own citizenship. It's not an appropriate way to approach the issue. And sometimes that's very, very controversial when you start talking about global citizenship. But I always talk about the two together because I think it's very, very important. So there's a balance between this global citizenship and understanding other cultures, understanding what's going on in the world, and also your own country, your own culture, your own background. The second area is dealing with world crisis. You can imagine when we had a problem between Pakistan and India, or we had a problem between Georgia and Russia, or we had a problem between in the world between the Palestine and Israel, and all of these areas in Africa and so forth, where these global these issues would flare up and are real problems for the world. We had students in the school from all of these countries and teachers from these different countries. So the emotions ran relatively high, particularly if there was a great deal of violence involved or a war going on. So at times, if it was very severe, we would have to get the students into safe areas. In other words, we would take all the sophomores or all the juniors or all the seniors into the auditorium and give them an opportunity to discuss what was going on and the pros and cons of it in a safe environment so they could get it out and it wasn't just done in the hallways of the school, but you could do it in a safe environment. And this really, and the teachers were trained, particular social studies teachers and so forth, and English teachers were trained to deal with these issues as they came up. But they did come up, and they were real issues, and their parents were working in the UN. And we're struggling with these same issues on a larger political basis. So these are, I would say, exciting times, but very difficult times. The 9/11, since we were right in New York, was obviously a very difficult time for everybody in the United States, everybody around the world, and you can imagine what it was like in our school. We had both parents working down there, as well as all these families from different countries who then had to react together and with each other to this particular crisis. So these were exciting, but they were also great opportunities to talk about how the world has become so small. And one of the issues that came up with 9/11, which I thought was pretty profound at the time, but it makes a lot of sense, is when you think about the internet and how fast information moves around the world, and you think like a country of Afghanistan where not too many years ago and even now, many Afghans don't know they live in a country. They don't have the concept of country or map in their head. They live in a village. They live in a valley. The mountains are very high. And so the idea of understanding what it is to live in the country, there is no understanding. So when you're dealing with that kind of education in many parts of the world, you're talking about these issues. Now, all of a sudden, the internet over, you know, the last number of years is pushing culture and pushing ideas across boundaries that were very sacred, in a sense, are very closed for centuries. And this is creating a lot of conflict and a lot of pushback, particularly culture types of things, because everything is on the internet and people can get access to it. And it is both very positive and it is also causing a lot of trouble in a lot of different places in the world. So this is a very fast change, a lot of fast changes going on in our world with this kind of communication. So dealing with world crisis, I think the new communication, the world economy, the globalization of things is good in some respects and difficult in others. So we have to train leaders and students so that they can work with these issues in the future, now and in the future, as the Secretary General mentioned. World standard curriculum. I mentioned the IB. And I found the IB to be extremely helpful in put into an international school, it was developed by international schools, was because you were always having arguments between the Americans and the British and the Germans about what should be emphasized in the school, and so in an international school. So when they created the IB, then there was no more argument because the curriculum was the IB and it wasn't British, American, it wasn't German, it wasn't Italian, it wasn't anything else, it wasn't French, it was the IB. So that became a way of getting by those particular arguments that went on continuously in international schools. But the world standard, the learning of language. When we lived in Copenhagen, I was just amazed one day. I went into it was kind of like a convenience store. What is it, 11? What's the 7-Eleven, that was it. I haven't been in the United States that long. I forget all these things. But 7-Eleven. I went into a 7-Eleven in Copenhagen, and I was going to buy something. So I was trying to say something in Danish, which was very bad. And the girl started talking English to me. And I was just kind of floored. This is when we first went there. And so I got interested in why everybody knew English. And the answer was, well, we're a very small country. And we depend on everybody else for trade. And so to survive in the world, we all had to learn English. And they all learned English. So you can go to Denmark, and just about 100% of the citizens there know English, which is kind of puts us to shame in America. So the curriculum is very important, and we need to really look at our curriculum as a world standard curriculum, and we really need to do a lot more with language and culture in that curriculum so that our students can understand a lot more about the world. Governance. I mention this because creating educational institutions are a matter of governance, and we have to look at our missions. Our mission statements, and we have to see, well, do they really meet the needs of our students in terms of living in this global world. We don't have any choice in this anymore. This is on us. And we need to look at our mission statements, not give up our core missions, but we need to say, well, is there anything else that should be added there to emphasize the need for our students to learn about living in this global world and providing the leadership that's necessary? It's a big challenge. And I've looked at a lot of mission statements, and not many of them really address this. But it has to come from there. Just like our mission statement for Whitworth University, I read it. It's a wonderful mission statement. I'm sure it drives the university. And that's the importance of a mission. But we need to look at these things. Are there things in there that would help drive some of the curriculum, drive some of the programs, so that students are given the opportunity and do learn more about the world and what's out there, and also providing opportunities through the programs of the school so that students can live in other cultures and live in other countries, which I know many universities have now. These Japanese students are here. I had a great time with them. I had to change my whole program because they didn't know as much English, but they're here. And I was really excited because at the UN school, the city of Yokohama sent us three teachers every year to learn English, but also to teach Japanese and to teach the culture of Japan. And it's wonderful to see all these students here. I think there's 45 of them here tonight from Japan who are here for 4 months and to learn English and to learn about the culture of America. These are the kind of programs I think that are so important. They don't want to go back, so they hope it snows a lot. They want at least 3 feet of snow before they, so their plane can't leave. I said I didn't know if we could do that. The need for students, and I think the big challenge was really exciting. When we have this need for students, all of us, to look not at ourselves, but to look at others and to serve others, to have an attitude of service to others, not only in our in our communities, which is very, very important, but also to look out and see what else is around the world. And I know in my education, that was a big part of the education, was to go out and serve others. That's kind of why we went to Afghanistan originally. It was my first teaching job, and I don't recommend it. I found myself struggling with living in a country, but also learning how to teach. Not that I didn't learn anything at Whitworth College. I'm sorry I used the word college. I can't use the word university, but Whitworth University. I did learn a lot, but as you know, going into the classroom for the first time is not an easy matter. I'd like to close just with a story, a very exciting story. Last year at our graduation, we had an author, a student named Ismael Bia from Sierra Leone. And Ismael Bia wrote a wonderful book called A Long Way Gone. And he was a child soldier in the wars in Sierra Leone and was rescued from that by the UN and also was brought to New York to speak about the idea of being, or the whole terror of being a child soldier. And a lady in New York took interest in him, was at one of these meetings where he spoke. And when he went back to Sierra Leone, the only relative he had left that hadn't been killed was his uncle. And when he got back, his uncle was murdered. And so he was left alone in the world. And he wrote or called this lady in New York, and she decided to adopt him. And he was a junior in high school, or going into his junior year in high school. This was in 1998. And it was my first year as the director of the United Nations International School, And it was, I think, one of my first decisions is that she wanted to have him come and be a student at the UN school. It was a difficult decision because you can imagine we didn't really know the young man, and he'd been a child soldier in Sierra Leone, and we didn't know if he got into some difficulty at the school how he would react. So we just were unsure, but I decided we must go ahead with this because the story was very compelling, and it was a way we could really help. Well, he was a wonderful student, and he graduated, and he went on to university. And he was writing papers at the university in English about his experiences, and his professors didn't believe him. They called him aside, and they said, "What are you talking about?" And he was writing all these rather terrible things about his experiences in the war as a child soldier. And so, of course, eventually they obviously believed him, and they helped him write this book, A Long Way Gone. And he came back. I asked him to speak to the students. And his message, I won't give you all half hour of it, but the essence of his message was this. You are privileged. You have everything. You have an education. You have parents that are working. You have parents. You have family. You have all of these things that have been given to you. And now it's time to give back. And he was a wonderful example of this, because what he was doing in writing this book is he was going around and giving back. He was really giving the message that we have to look out for each other. We have to look out beyond ourselves, and we have to do something in the world which will make a difference. And it was a powerful message from such a young man who had been through so much. But his message to these kids, and I remember him just sitting there, you could hear a pin drop in the General Assembly, because it was so riveting about his experience and what he was really saying to these students. He was very positive, he was very upbeat, and he was saying, get out there and do something. But to get out there and do something, they had to learn about the world. They had to learn what's out there. And it's a lot different than we think. And when you hear statistics that 80% of the people in the world live in abject poverty, in our definition, that's a scary figure. But when you get out there and see it, you really understand it. And you really realize that you can make a difference. And I'm not talking about just Americans. I'm not talking about just the Western world. I'm talking about all the people in the world need to take a look around them and get outside of yourselves and do something that you can do. And it's amazing what students can do. It's amazing what we can all do to make a difference in this world. So thank you very much. And I was very happy to be here tonight, not only because we returned to Whitworth, but also because of being able to talk about such an important subject in our lives. And I really do appreciate it. So thank you very much. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.